It's a mixed-use site, so it needs to be jointly underwritten by both the Housing Bureau and the Development Commission staff. I think it's a great opportunity to really work together on this effort and to achieve both of our goals. We will stress additional home ownership and home repair activities. In the state of housing, there was actually a net decline in home ownership of 500 households within the Gateway District, which is the largest loser, I think, in terms of the actual neighborhoods that we looked at in the state of housing.
So yeah, the rest of Gateway is it's really resource constrained. That's the main theme with Gateway. I think this and Lentz are the two areas, urban renewal areas, that where I think stakeholders to kind of build on Commissioner Fritz's point. I'm not sure that we've had a full conversation with our East Portland urban renewal areas on this topic. So you probably have a little bit more of a difference of opinion in places like Gateway and Lentz. So of the remaining, you know, do the math on this about you know, $15 million, how does the district want this spent? Not that that's the final word, but it certainly is part of the feedback. And this is an area that's really wanted to have their commercial districts revitalized to generate more activity there. It's ongoing infrastructure needs. You could begin to think about street grid issues all day long in Gateway. So there are a lot of priorities for a very small pot of money here. So it is an area where you can find resources for the set aside, Commissioner Fish. But I do think there's some trade-offs in terms of priorities, not in terms of commitments.
Good. As you keep going through this, I noticed that you're actually not giving us a bottom line of each one of how much money is under the cushions in each one. How much might be available for affordable housing. You're telling us what's programmed, but not what's left.
Yeah, I mean, so we can get you that, I think, and so we can get you the information. We can get you that.
Our CFOs have been working on this for quite some time. We have some massive spreadsheets which actually reveal that. We didn't roll it up here in the this summer. Yeah.
And is there a particular reason that we're going so fast?
We just want to make sure you have ample question time.
No, not for this work session, but for the whole process of having discussions with our communities, with our various stakeholders, of, you know, coming before you've got the money numbers for us.
I guess I'm the one that's urging quick council action. I think, you know, last week we just declared a housing crisis. And, you know, I would just say I don't recall Parks Bureau ever coming to the Portland Housing Advisory Commission to ask about our feelings about increasing the SDCs. I mean, we can do process till the cows come home if we want. And we're outlining a process here that has the council setting a goal next week and having up until the end of January for the bureaus to figure it all out. I don't think that's moving too fast.
So Interstate is one of our more robust URAs, and the flight of low and moderate income people out of North and Northeast Portland into principally South and Southeast Portland, as we've documented in the state of housing, has added a sense of urgency to our efforts there. We have identified a series of different activities. Home ownership remains a very large commitment. We have $2.5 million available, which we have kept out of the NOFA because the North and Northeast Portland Oversight Committee wants to be directly involved and engaged with the procurement and the selection of vendors for those programs. And so we've honored that. We have funds to undertake land banking. We have offers pending that have not yet been closed yet on some catalytic sites. The Grant Warehouse site was awarded to PCRI, and we're confident that they will, with working with Gertie Nedelin Development, will move in a timely manner on that project. The Kings Park site is within the NOFA and will be an offered property along with cash equity that developers, be they nonprofit or for-profit, may choose to avail themselves of. We have been in, as I mentioned, Multnomah County is contributing a site to the SuperNOFA, and we've been in discussions with TriMet on an available site that they have as a remainder to the Interstate Max construction.
Kurt, two questions. One, in terms of what Dan said a while ago about potential way to get to 50 without doing violence across all the urban renewal districts, and interstate being a target of opportunity. Is your thinking based in part on recent experience when we took $20 million that was programmed for things like business and redevelopment, shifted it to the mayor's housing initiative, and in fact the neighborhood and the community largely applauded that expenditure?
Yes, it is. There is a great deal of unity of purpose in North and Northeast Portland. I've been going to the Oversight Committee meetings myself. I've met with Bishop Stephen Holt. I have a good sense that there is some real cohesion around the issue of housing. Home ownership remains a very strong goal there, and we do need to make sure that we have a balanced delivery system that includes both rental and home ownership.
So I, sitting here right now, I don't remember the income guidelines by district. And so one of the things that would be of some concern to me is if in formulating a way to get to 50 and understanding that we can get there in the aggregate, if we chose a couple of urban renewal districts that had income guidelines or other restrictions which prevented us from getting to our overall goals of emphasizing 0 to 30 and addressing homelessness. Does that make sense? Because each district has been, to a certain extent, customized. And if we're going to, as a council, decide, and I'm not saying we are, but if we were to decide that we're going to go into a couple of districts where there's a lot more money, how do we make sure that in doing so we're also meeting the citywide housing goals and not just putting the customized housing goals of a particular urban renewal on steroids?
I'm going to defer to Matthew because he's much closer to the numbers on this, but I do think that we can get there.
So I do think that that's a point that needs consideration. You know, it's the central city urban renewal areas that have the higher proportion of the set aside going to 0 to 30. And so the neighborhood URAs have a lower proportion of the overall revenue going to 0 to 30. And so one piece there would possibly need to be revisiting the income guidelines to adjust them accordingly.
But the proposal that came to us had as one of its conditions, according to your handout, that we not change the income guideline, income target guidelines. And that, I guess, was based on the view that if we're looking at 30% in the aggregate, we don't want to change them. But our point now is a little different. If we end up focusing on 2, 3, 4 urban renewal districts that have a lot of money that we can shift to housing, we also have to take a look to make sure they're meeting citywide housing goals, and that may require an adjustment.
And in the PHEC discussion around setting the 50% retaining the income guidelines, that conversation happened in the context of the 0 to 30 and making sure that we keep 0 to 30 a priority. And at that point, I don't think the discussions had moved to the level of detail on where adjustments may or may not be made in URAs. But PHACs, in the consideration through the review process, they were prioritizing that 0 to 30, those households, and supporting those households.
Patrick?
So Interstate is, as Commissioner Fish brought up, is the district where we have the most opportunity to increase the set-aside. So I've listed all the different priorities that are here, but we still have significant unused debt capacity within Interstate, and so you have the opportunity for very significant increase in the set aside. And I mean, the number could be a third to a half of the goal we're trying to reach. And so from an Interstate perspective, it's really how does that fit in with the overall goal of the district, and how does the council feel about that level of concentration of expenditure in a neighborhood? But that, I mean, I think that's the bottom line, is Interstate has the most availability right now.
So why are we taking the 50% across the board without necessarily designating where that is, rather than the approach that was taken before with we're going to put $20 million more into affordable housing in Interstate? Why don't we just say...
I think that's your call. I think that's council's decision how to implement this. It's not...
I would feel much more comfortable with the allocation approach rather than the broad brush and then figure it out later.
And then Lentz.
Lentz is a key area of opportunity, and probably after Interstate, the second largest contributor to the net available revenue. As you may well know, there's a series of commitments that have already been made. The Palindrome Communities has the new Copper Penny under contract and is undertaking another project with a microbrewery in the core of Lentz. Rose CDC has a commitment that has been made to them on Woody Guthrie, and the upcoming NOFA will include the additional site at 72nd and Foster. We continue to be shy of our goal with respect to home repair and down payment assistance in Lentz, and I think this is a public statement that we need to do better in that regard to meet our goals.
Obviously, the discussion of affordable housing gets more complicated in Lentz because of the different market that operates there. And what is currently market rate housing versus affordable housing, there's a different, same in Gateway, there's a less of a delta in that area. So what, in the next 2 years, where are we making investments in Lentz that are going to generate 0-30 rental?
Oh, Matthew, Javier, I think you are closer to this than I am.
One of the policies that we have established in development of affordable housing has been that all projects should include some 0-30 units to the degree that is feasible. And typically it's been about 5% of the units, and that's what we tend to underwrite under. That's the extent to which we have done affordable 0-30 housing in the neighborhood URAs, unless we have a partnership with Home Forward that aligns project-based Section 8 vouchers to the project so that we can definitely go deeper than that. One of the things that we are looking at is our rent assistance program and being able to match those rent assistance to some of the projects that we have since we are currently funding, but that's an option that we're looking at to get to the 0-30 as well.
So Javier, what's the income profile of the development that's proposed, the new Copper Penny?
It is 0-6, it's the same type of profile that we had. I believe it's about 5-7% of 0-30, and the rest are 0-60. The same. The Rose proposal has 11 units out of the 40. That would be 0-30.
So you said there's a lot of spare money in Lentz. Is that over and above what was in the Lentz 5-year action plan?
Yeah, I'm not sure that the folks from Lentz would say they have a lot of spare money, but yeah, it's probably the area with the second most kind of unprogrammed money in terms of debt capacity. I think this is where we've heard the most feedback on competing priorities, particularly around redevelopment projects and kind of creating, you know, building out the town center and then also job creation. And you know, so we continue to work as an example on the industrial job potential on Foster Road east of 205. That might require significant dollars. It's not programmed right now, but it's money that that could go a long way towards increasing the amount of industrial space available for companies there. If you look on this, like this slide here, to get the get the four projects going in Lentz Town Center, three of them have affordable housing in them. We're putting in redevelopment dollars of around $25 million. So the trade-off to when market rents are basically at this 60% MFI, not only so everything is relatively affordable, but projects don't happen. So as long as that dynamic exists, we're going to need redevelopment dollars on top of set aside dollars to make projects happen. So that's the other piece of this: is how do we make sure that we have the funds to do redevelopment in Lentz? But yeah, I mean there's opportunity to increase the set aside in Lentz. You could go to 50% in Lentz, theoretically. I mean, the availability is there.
So Lentz has worked really hard to finally start taking off, and the community did engage in the update of the 5-year action plan that we adopted last year. Chair Kelly was copied on a message from Annette Matson, who chaired that.
Yeah.
Did that get shared with you as well?
Yeah.
Or okay,
yeah.
I can send it to you if you haven't seen it. It does seem to me that that's a particular area where engaging the community in asking them what they would like to have done with the dollars that they really have rightly feel ownership of and an investment in the success of the plan would be a wise thing to do. So I don't know how quickly that can be done, but I would be hesitant to pass a 50% policy that may seem like it is a done deal for Lentz, especially given this conversation that there's plenty of money in Lentz, without asking the community there, what is it that you would like?
I agree with Commissioner Fritz on this, because there's also a longer history there of some broken promises.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's still some people still reacting to the proposal to put a minor league baseball team in the middle of a park and then pave it. And whether you think that was a good idea or a bad idea, it certainly, at the time, seemed like a novel idea. So I think we have to keep faith. On the other hand, I'm heartened by a couple things that were in your most recent NOFA, or either NOFA or, if it wasn't a NOFA, it was a...
RFI.
I'm violating all of Commissioner Fritz's rules about acronyms, but I just want to make sure I understand what it was. For example, Asian Health and Service Center had proposed doing an affordable housing development for older seniors, for older adults, culturally competent, somehow linked to their new service center. Struck me as a very interesting idea, and they didn't get funded because we didn't have the housing dollars. Is that right?
No, it didn't move forward because they the proposal came in with two projects. Basically, one was the community center, and the second one was the affordable housing piece. We chose to work now with the Asian Health Service Center on getting the community center done, and then tackling the affordable housing piece later. Subsequent to that, we then worked with PHB on to put out the remaining dollars as a NOFA, so I think they could compete for that or not. But that's the community center was a priority, and we wanted to kind of work on a first project, not have two projects going at once. The same thing is true. Palindrome proposed on 92H, as we call it, but the 3-acre site that we own that's adjacent to the Boys and Girls Club, where the Lentz Little League used to be. That's still a priority for the neighborhood. That's likely to be some kind of mixed use, mixed income development there. We chose to put that on hold, their proposal on hold, just because we thought, you got the New Copper Penny, you have all the brewery-related stuff going on, and so we put that one on hold as well.
I would say that the rate of change in the Southeast is profound, and that there have been, I think, some divisions in the community between Lentz and the larger community of East Portland about the importance of low-income housing. Some folks have said that they already have enough. And yet most of the affordable housing that is there is privately owned, privately financed. It's not got any sort of long-term use restrictions on it. So as we saw the wave of gentrification move through North and Northeast Portland, we are fearful that unless we double down on long-term affordable housing commitments in Lentz, that the opportunity may be lost in the next 5 years. South Park is really kind of a rounding exercise as I look at it. I mean, Javier, this money is in the NOFA, as I recall.
Right. I mean, this is kind of the end of the district, and we are making all the resources available in the NOFA. It'll be interesting to see what kind of proposals we get once this is out.
South Park Blocks is... it's right now it's 61%. It'll have the highest percentage of expenditures on affordable housing, I think, of any urban renewal area. The district is closed. It's been closed for a long time. So the last three districts we're going to look at are all closed, meaning that we haven't issued new debt in some time. And so South Park Blocks is the first. Basically all the remaining money, except for this $1 million, has been allocated to affordable housing already.
Downtown Waterfront has a significant amount, $2 million in the NOFA. Obviously, sites are not prolific in this area. We're dealing with a lot of quarter blocks.
Even though what I would
What I would add is that even though it is, we do have $2 million and set aside, we also receive income from this urban renewal. So it'll be $15 million that will be going to NOFA for development. That will include the $2 million.
So downtown waterfront is, we have the nice experience of having, as I mentioned, this one's closed as well. We haven't issued debt in downtown waterfront since 2008. So the operations in this urban renewal area for both housing and PDC are simply the revolving of funds that are either loan repayments or property sales and unspent proceeds from the last debt offering. Because of the uptick in the real estate market, we've been able to receive more income on both loans and property, and so we have money available to tackle some longstanding redevelopment projects, and then we're also able to make a higher contribution to the Old Town Chinatown action plan. So downtown waterfront is contributing to that. Just to actually go all the way back to the letter from Leah Greenwood, I just want to highlight a few things because she does highlight some opportunities in downtown waterfront. One of them is our property Third and Oak, and I just want to kind of provide some clarity on that. Third and Oak is the infamous property that had negative value a decade ago. It was the property where we have committed to this long-term parking obligation from the buyer, and so that parking obligation, when the downturn happened, made the property basically we'd have to pay someone to take it off our hands. So the property has never been well suited to use for affordable housing because of the obligation. The obligation is valued roughly at $3 million right now, the value of providing that parking. So we have the opportunity to actually sell it to a private buyer, to develop a hotel on it, and in the process, they will pay us enough that we can actually build the parking, own the parking, and take care of that obligation and have revenue from it. So we're making something out of nothing with Third and Oak, given where it was, but it's not really, like I said, that's one of the reasons why that property has never been well suited for affordable housing. Second piece of it was, this is one of the areas where there was a lot of focus on the contingency. The contingency here is one of these in the districts where it's based almost entirely on property sales and other income that's uncertain, and loan payments from loans to places like the Oregon College of Oriental Medicine and White Stag Building. So we're just not a reliable source, and so we're not banking on it. But then the last piece is we still are hopeful to make an investment in a development at Block 33 in Old Town, which is the super block next door to PDC's offices, but it's long been kind of a hole in the middle of Old Town.
As far
Oregon
as
Convention Center?
Yeah, the Convention Center is, we think it's becoming a community of choice. It's becoming a real neighborhood with the development activities, largely privately financed development activities, although I'm proud to say that the Miracles in Central, if you haven't been by there lately, is well underway, under construction. And we continue to own the Block 45 parcel, which perhaps within this NOFA we'll see a proposal for that site.
Patrick, that's the property that migrated from PDC to PHB when we made the change. And once upon a time, there had been a proposal out there to put a hotel. Okay.
But
it's a housing site. Yeah, there's a flagship hotel, obviously, in the neighborhood. It's already spoken for.
Oregon Convention Center. So Oregon Convention Center probably has the most it's probably the most open for philosophical conversation about the district. There is a fair amount of money from the last bond sale in the district. That bond sale was done in anticipation of our investment in the Veterans Memorial Coliseum back in 2012. So the debate about what to do with the Veterans Memorial Coliseum remains active. And then in addition, there's ongoing talk about the Rose Quarter in general, and so I do think it's worthy of another conversation with council as what the strategy is in Rose Quarter, in the Rose Quarter, including the Coliseum. I think once again I would contend that we have the opportunity to think of the Rose Quarter in the same way that we're thinking of the post office site, which is kind of vastly underused
a district. The land right now is all in city ownership, so you do have the potential to do things on the land. And it's beyond just the plaza and the arenas. All the land that goes from Broadway to the transit center, and to think about how that might be another mixed-use community. So Commissioner Novick's idea, I'm not going to be up on record about demolishing or maintaining the Coliseum, but there is you do have the opportunity, I think, to create some kind of community there as well with housing that could include affordable housing on that site. Cities control that land with some resources to invest, I do think is an opportunity that should be considered.
So Mayor, when will we be having the discussion about what to do with the Rose Quarter and Memorial Coliseum?
Not the next week. I can predict that much.
So this concludes our walkthrough. That's also was prepared to talk about that.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Thanks, Kurt and Patrick, Javier, Matthew. Tom, did you want to add anything more?
Yeah, I don't know that we were responsive to Commissioner about the letter from the people from Lance, which definitely PDC hears that. I just want to make that comment.
So as I said at the outset, you know, my goal is next week to bring an ordinance to council that would establish a higher goal than 30% that we currently have for affordable housing set aside. And assuming council adopts a higher goal, that will kick into action discussions between PDC, Housing, PBOT, Parks, all the different bureaus to revise the URA expenditures accordingly and bring that back to us in time for our budget adoption. And as I said, I think we can pretty much get a higher goal without touching the tremendous amount of work that was put in by this council on North McAdam or South Waterfront. And the Central East Side. I firmly believe that. I think the testimony we heard today from our staff bolsters that contention. And with that, I thank everybody.
I have a question. Will I have the numbers of what's left over in each URA by next week?
Yes.
Thank you. And Commissioner, I have a couple of questions about your proposed ordinance and exhibit. It says that the policy is for 100% of median income and then shifts the MFI rate to 80%.
That's the existing policy that you're reading.
So that was the original one, Commissioner. That is in the packet we got about it.
Yes.
I had the same question, but that was just a copy of the original one.
Okay, but then the exhibit is also from that?
Yes, yes.
So yeah, I see, thank you.
Because Commissioner Fritz, I had the same concern when I saw the packet. And Dan, in any review that we're doing of the 30% set aside, you do not intend to propose new income guidelines or to change the current focus of the 30% set aside in terms of who we target, do you?
No, that's not my intention.
When we see the reference to 100% in the existing policy, that's because there's a, my recollection is for home ownership, we have a more generous ceiling than we do for affordable rental. Is that correct?
Correct. 100% applies to home ownership opportunities. 100% of median income.
So one of the questions that's come out of this excellent discussion, frankly, is, other than my concern about the radical agreement that you both have, but we'll get to that privately. Pardon me?
Violent.
I was thinking about the Nation magazine at 150 tonight, radical, but we'll talk violent.
We don't work together, we can criticize, we're
agreeing. Don't be violent about it, that's what we're saying.
That's because PDC stands for pretty damn convenient.
Thank you.
But this discussion has suggested a number of different routes. One is that we set an aspirational goal, and then we charge the various parties to sort of figure out how to reach that goal. Another approach that I heard one of my colleagues suggest is that we don't set an aspirational goal, we just identify where we can reprogram some money, and we come up with an option one, option two, option three. And there are probably lots of other options in between. So I'm just curious, of all the different approaches that have been highlighted here, do each of you gentlemen have a preferred approach to how we move forward?
Well, as you can see, we have cleaned out a lot of fund reserves and put that money out into the community, and we will do so in the next 2 weeks. I'm mindful that we have a housing emergency and we need to deploy our resources as rapidly as possible. I'm not holding back because I'm of the belief that we need to challenge our legacy nonprofit partners and our private developers to actually produce the kind of housing where we need it as quickly as possible. That means that going into the 2017 budget, I will have deployed everything. And I feel like that's my job as a resourceful director, is to do so, at the same time be available for the discussion about new funding sources. I do want to underscore one thing, because I've been in Patrick's job in a couple of different localities. I was at Metro King County, responsible both for housing and for economic development. And what I witnessed in the 80s, and I stayed there till 91, was that when the economy was growing very robust, the focus turned to housing. However, when the housing market went tailed off, the emphasis was on jobs. So we want a resilient approach. We don't want to dismantle the job creation and the placemaking apparatus of the city of Portland, because we know that we're in a cyclical business cycle. We happen to be on the upswing for housing. But I'm mindful that we want to create family wage jobs in this community as well. So that's the underlying sort of nature of our agreement, because I think we appreciate what each other brings and as institutions, what we bring to the table. So it's my job as the Housing Bureau Director to advocate for new resources and to use wisely those public funds available to me, and that's my pledge to you.
I guess my approach is just more kind of practical, pragmatic. I think we should be thinking about what outcomes we're looking for over what period of time, and then chart the path that gets us there. If it translates into a policy that we can update, that's great. If we're really just kind of going URA by URA and we pull together resources to get there, then that's the approach. Because we're nearing the end of the life of urban renewal as we know it, I think the policy becomes less and less meaningful, and the dollars become more and more meaningful, because we can see the end in every district. So we might as well just figure it out that way. I think fundamentally that has to be part of the solution. But if if there's a need for accountability on the overall number, I get that as well. But we're going to have to go and look at all the budgets and go URA by URA. I also just once again, this on the post office, and I say this just because the set aside policy was crafted at a moment in time where we thought about it as we allocate dollars, we get units. When we have other opportunities to get outcomes, and incorporating units into development opportunities is really what the post office is about, we should have a policy that reflects that. So just to say, does it count for the set aside or not, is almost an irrelevant topic. If it gets us the outcome we want, then it should be part of the solution. So I think the set-aside policy may need to reflect that. But either way, if we all agree this is the path forward by taking money here, here, and there and putting the post office in play, that works for me.
So, I guess some number like 50% seems to me to be so arbitrary. And it's really, and I think the public is going to understand dollars much more clearly than what percentage we're setting aside someplace. And potentially, I think that the floor of 30% is appropriate, should be left, and we should aspire to somewhere in the 50%, but that we do that, again, on a case-by-case, URA by URA. I'm kind of amazed how these two gentlemen are so much in concert, which I think you should all value very much. That we can, PDC and PHB, work together to get to a level that is acceptable to the community. I really worry that all of this affordable housing thing is centered on URAs and that we aren't thinking about the rest of the city. What about the rest of East Portland that could use some affordable housing? What about a lot of areas in the west side that could use some affordable housing? And we're just focusing on, because of TIF, we're focusing on TIF areas. So I guess my perspective would be that I think the city needs to think bigger and think of other resources for funding beyond just PDC if we're going to solve this problem.
Very good point. Other, in my air traffic control role here, other requests for follow-up information that any of us need from either PDC or the Housing Bureau going forward?
First, I just want to say amen to your comment, Tom. But the criticism feels a little bit like, you know, sometimes labor gets accused of only focusing on, you know, negotiating it over wages, hours, and working conditions. Well, it turns out the law only allows them to advocate on those issues. They don't generally get to talk about how you restructure management or do other kinds of things. Those are not mandatory subjects of bargaining. And the kind of policies that you have advocated that would allow us to do a broader-based housing policy have been severely undercut by people that aren't at this table. Every year we take a significant cut to CDBG and HOME. Those dollars are not bound by urban renewal districts, and some would eliminate funding altogether. We still can't convince the legislature to lift the preemption to even allow us to have a discussion about inclusionary zoning. And there are other impediments. So I, your point's very well taken. I guess because it's now effectively the most robust tool that's within our toolkit, we're forced to look at 15% of the city as being the play opportunity area. We hope someday to make it 100% of the city, but it is, unfortunately. And urban renewal dollars still, you know, they come with restrictions. I mean, that's why I support putting as much money as we can into Dan's HIF. Why I think specifically we should put the Airbnb and other short-term rental money into the HIF, because we want the HIF to be as flexible as possible. TIF money has strings, federal money has strings. The HIF, as Dan has envisioned it, is the most flexible dollar. And I think we should put as much flexible dollars in there as possible. My only point in terms of wrapping up is, Dan, whatever proposal you land on to come to council to have that discussion, I want us to make sure that in crafting this new policy, we are looking at where the need is in terms of the housing and not just being guided by what are the existing protocols within the urban renewal districts. And just to put it as plainly as possible, if all the money was in Gateway and Gateway's made it clear that all they want to do is home ownership, we can't be bound by that and spending a lot more money in Gateway to address affordable housing. So necessarily, we have to think about this additional money as being 30% money, and we have to specifically target it, in my judgment, to where the greatest need is. And that may require a recalibration of the formula within the districts that seem to be the opportunity districts that have the most money. So thank you.
And make one more comment, which I see the tremendous energy in our city from the affordable housing community, and I would love to see that energy focused on the legislature in regard to the inclusionary zoning policies.
I think if we make it our top legislative priority next session, for the next session, and call on the community to help, that we might get some help.
We might get some.
I just wanted to say that in the past couple of months, several entities have made the argument that whenever we have one-time, quote-unquote, surplus revenues, 50 to 100 in our regular budget, in the general fund, 50 to 100% of that money should go to transportation. And even though I'm the transportation commissioner, that conversation has made me nervous, because I think that there might be years where, because of various factors, it makes sense to put more than 50% of one-time funding into housing or emergency preparedness or parks or something else, even though I agree, of course, that transportation is woefully underfunded. I think that allocating X percent of a revenue source to Y without thinking about the competing demands and sort of spelling out who's going to get what is a bit dangerous. I mean, I joked to Commissioner Fritz yesterday that maybe we should decide that we're going to allocate 50% of TIF to housing and 50% to parks and 50% to earthquake preparedness and 50% to transportation, because by God, we ask our athletes to give 200% in the field. It's about time we had these URAs give 200%. So I'm very encouraged by the fact that these two bureau directors are working together so well. As Commissioner Fritz said, I think we want to be sure we're consulting with people in the various affected neighborhoods and make sure that Parks, PBOT, and the other bureaus are brought in to look at these projections. But I'm quite convinced that we can get to further investments in housing. I'm just not sure the best way to get there is by picking a percentage instead of just doing the hard work of going through it URA by URA and making choices.
Commissioner Saltzman, thank you very much. Thank you all.
Thank you.